Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Canobio, it's Chris Algieri, and we're powered by PPV.com. 1025 is quickly approaching. It's almost a month away. We're going to see Sebastian Fundora put his title on the line against Keith one-time Thurman, Oshaki Foster, stepping in the ring against Stephen Fulton. Should be a fun one out in Vegas. Streaming live on PPV.com. No subscriptions and all that funny business. Go fight to fight. Live interactive chat with me, Chris, and some other special guests. Never ask for a long-term commitment, right, Chris? Because boxing fans, we don't do long-term commitments.
No, we don't do subscriptions. We don't do long-term commitments. It's a la carte, baby. You buy what you want. You view what you want. And but unfortunately, we're all addicts, so we buy everything. We want to see everything. So whatever, a la carte turns into a buffet.
41 million viewers turned into Netflix for
not
Bud
surprised.
Could it have been higher if it didn't start at 1 in the morning?
That's a great point, because I know a lot of people that are like, they saw the time and like, nope, going to bed, I got kids. And then it was just like, burp. You know, even me, like I do a live interactive chat at 2:15 a.m. East Coast time. And I was just like, oh.
It set me back. I'm getting old, all right? And a 2 a.m.
I don't feel right today. It's 4 days later. I'm still I don't. That podcast that we did on Sunday morning afterwards, I don't remember any of it. It was like a blur.
Yeah, you were pretty mean to Canelo.
Yeah, which is crazy. I love Canelo. So, listen, Canelo, I'm sorry. I was sleep deprived.
We'll understand. We'll talk about that in a second, but I do some housekeeping here. We are celebrating 8 years of Inside Boxing Live, September 17th, 2017. The Monday following Triple G Canelo 2, I decided I was going to get into the media world. I was going to get from beyond, like being a researcher, producer. I was going to get in front of the cameras, in front of the mics, out on Long Island, my dad and my brother. 400 episodes later, added a co-host, former champ. A lot of trips, a lot of great episodes, a lot of bad episodes, but 400 of them, baby. And it's also 3-year anniversary of Chris Algieri joining the podcast. This is a very busy, busy week for IBL.
Oh, it was this time of year, wasn't it? Yeah. So I guess I really joined
for Canelo Triple G3.
Right. And we did a watch party for that. We were on the couches at John Boy Media Studios. People. That was cool. That was fun. That was early. Wow. I was still thinking about fighting back then.
I went back and watched a clip. Like, we did a real late night post pod. Yeah, you always look fight ready, but like, I could tell like you were, you know, figuring it out still.
Yeah. No, I was in and out at that point. Like, that was right around when I was like, I'm done. I was like right there. I was like, I think I can go for another run. And I was just like, and then the injuries just kept adding up. But yeah, man, congratulations. 8 years is amazing.
Congratulations to us.
Turned into a thing. 3 years is crazy that I've been doing this for 3 years with you. And I tell the story all the time. I know our listeners who have been listening for a while have heard this story before. It was our second episode together when I came on, and I go, Dan, one day soon, you're not going to have to do anything else. And it was, you know, telling him, because it was good. The shows were good. I knew it was good, and I knew it was going to take off. And Dan does such a good job behind the scenes that now we can't not be successful.
Thank you, bro. Appreciate it. And thank you to everyone who's tuned in over the years. I've got posted a nice little sentimental photo dump on Instagram. So some people have been down since day one, a lot of great feedback and love it. You know, our last episode did really well with Canelo Crawford, as expected, because that was a huge fight. Let's go there. Mm-hmm. Let's start there. Enough with the lovey-dovey stuff. Let's get into the grown men punching each other in the face aspect of this podcast. 41 million people tuned in. I thought it could have been more, but it was still a win. It wasn't a bad fight. I talked to a lot of my casual boxing fan friends and just casual sports fans that tuned in, and they weren't talking about, oh, that fight stunk. They were like, why was it on so late? but it was more, you know, it was a good fight. And, you know, we do this thing where we talk about what's next. And you know, we did that Sunday morning pod, which is such a knee-jerk type of podcast where you can't fully get all the information. I did not know that Crawford mentioned on the post-fight show that a move to 160. You know, he hasn't tipped his hand, Crawford. He's going on an unbelievable press tour. I'm like, so happy to see Bud collaborate with the NFL, go on the field at Monday Night Football. If you told me 2018 Bud Crawford, and then look at the Bud Crawford now, right? Remember 2018 Bud didn't want to do interviews.
Yeah, no, he was, I mean, we like to say he's unmarketable, but I think we're realizing that he probably was marketable. And yes, you do learn, because I learned too. I didn't want to talk to anyone early on in my career either, and I realized that I had to in order to sell myself and get out of Long Island, because that was a big goal for me. But, you know, with Bud, you see him taking to it, and like, he's got a good personality. He's fun. He's willing to get on the Shannon Sharp podcast, and he's willing to say these things. And like, he gets people, I don't know, he gets people talking. And I think he's probably a lot more marketable than he was ever given credit for. But again, he could have learned that along the way, and he kind of pushed himself that he needs to do this in order to make more money. And listen, it's working, and I love to see it. I want to make as much money as possible.
I wish he wasn't 38.
That's boxing, baby. Well,
bro, Monday morning he did McAfee. He did Ariel's show. He did something with The Ring. He went to Monday Night Football. He did a collaborated post with the NFL. 41 million followers the NFL have. I mean, yeah, this is awesome. I'm glad he's getting his flowers. I mean, it's very important. And we see so many fighters towards the end of their career, they go out on a loss, or they come back, or, you know. So with Bud, you know, Shakur has talked about how he wants him to just retire on the Ariel Helwani show. Shakur said he should just hang it up. But I don't think that's going to be the case. Like, BOMAC has tipped his hand a little bit and said that 154 is out of the picture, which I don't find surprising at all.
I said that earlier today.
Right. Come on. He's not going to. That's it's crazy.
He put on a lot of good lean tissue. Get ready for this fight.
Yeah, he did everything right in the lead up. I mean, he had a year too, which helps. He had a year to put on the weight, and we were all wondering, should he have taken a fight at 160? Should he have taken a fight at 168? Like, I think we're going to stop doubting Bud, but like, now we're looking at what's next. And Crawford has kind of tipped his hand and said that a move to 160 would be an option, so he could become six division world champion. And you take a look around at
so ridiculous.
Like, it's right there. I mean, he can certainly do it, because look at the middleweight picture right now. Janabek has the IBF and the WBO. Carlos Adames has the WBC. Arislandi Lara has the WBA. Crawford would be a big favorite over all three. Janabek would be the trickiest. Adames, I think, would be the easiest to make with his ties to Riyadh season. And then there's Arislandi Lara with the WBA title as well. But Bud, six division world champion middleweight, makes some sense here.
I made this point where, listen, you mentioned the 38. How many fights does he really have? And 60, we've been kind of talking, like, not necessarily. I mean, I don't want to say it's barren, because I don't want to disrespect the champions that are there. But the path to undisputed's pretty quick. It very easy to make a Carlos Adames Lara fight, right? In the meantime, while Bud does his world tour of celebrating his Crawford, his Canelo win.
I think that's so the hardest part. The other guys to fight each other.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, Janabek already has two belts.
Right.
Right? And then you got Lara and Adames, and they're on the same side of the promotional road. Mm-hmm. So if those two could get together and they could unify that fight, and I would favor Adames in that fight based on youth, and just, I think Adames is actually very, very good. And then Bud gets that fight, which probably wouldn't be that hard to make. And then, I mean, a unification with, you got two belt holder, two guys who have two belts. Why not make that fight happen, and we can get a unified middleweight champion? And not undisputed, exactly. I'm not saying that Crawford walks through any of these guys. I think they're tough fights, but I do favor him against Adames. And I would favor him against Janabek. That one's a more difficult fight based on the style, but I would favor him to be able to beat all of those guys.
You know what's funny? It's like Crawford is now turning into Canelo in 2021. Canelo in 2021 entered, or even before that, entered 168. And it were, they weren't huge fights, like the to become undisputed. It was the Callum Smith fight. It was the BJ Saunders fights. They were big because of Canelo. I know Canelo's a much bigger draw than Crawford. But now Crawford going to 160, these aren't big marketable fights, but they are historic fights. And at that time, Canelo was chasing down history to become undisputed in another weight class. That's where Crawford is right now. Like he will entertain a rematch with Canelo. He will entertain to a certain degree a crossover fight with Ilya Topuria. He will look at a Eubank overseas. I'm sure they will. But there's history still to be made. And to become a six-division world champion, and if he really wants to stick around, to become a four-division undisputed, then we're like cementing yourself as like those are insane accolades.
That's when you start setting records that can't be broken. Like you're on a different echelon. And I mean, it's crazy to even think it is possible, but it's so possible. Not easy. Again, those fighters, I'm not saying any of those guys are walkovers. Like they're real fights, of course. And we saw him struggle with Madrimov at 54. He almost lost that fight. So do you, a guy like Janabek, who is another Eastern Bloc guy who's kind of awkward and athletic, but also can punch and bigger and is a real 60 pounder. Yeah, it's still a tall ask, and especially at 38 years old, and he's not getting younger. But damn it, he seems to be getting better.
I wouldn't doubt him. I mean, Adames would be fun. I think Adames, you know, a little more flat footed, a little more stationary. Lara at this point in his career is very stationary. This isn't the Lara of old. This isn't the Lara that fought Floyd Mayweather. He is so inactive too.
Or Canelo. Switched...
What's that?
No. Lara fought Canelo, not Floyd.
Right. Sorry. Right. Thank you. I just wish these middleweights were more active. I wish the division has been awful for the last 3 or 4 years. Like now we have a guy in Crawford, the hottest thing on the block, joining your division. Yeah, it sucks that they get rewarded in a way, but like, all right. But like Janabek, I feel like would be probably the most the toughest of the.
I agree.
And it would be for the two belts. And then I know you mentioned like it would make sense if Adames and Lara would fought, but why haven't they fought yet? You know what I mean? Like they're gonna do what everyone else does. Like, oh, Crawford's in my division. I'm not gonna fight. We're not gonna fight each other. I'm gonna wait for Crawford to pick me.
That's a good point. And you run the chance of, I mean, Al Smart. He'd be like, oh, I can get my guys both fighting Crawford, so they both get paid. You get the Adames fight, you get the Lara fight. You know, Lara gets his one last payday. Adames, you know, gets a fight of his career, and then they go to the Janabek fight, but. I'd much rather those two fight each other and make that fight bigger against Crawford. But you're right. That probably doesn't happen.
Yeah. And Janabek, he would get the two belts. Like, how important is it for him to become undisputed? Is it enough for to be a sixth division world champion? Like, I think a sixth division world champion is perfectly fine. Four division undisputed, you know, we know the undisputed game. It's a lot of politics. It's a lot of time. It takes time to become undisputed. Yeah. You know, at 147, he picked off that last belt at 154.
It's not a lot of time when you just jump right to a weight class and you fight the undisputed champion like Canelo Alvarez. I mean,
not all undisputed are built the same. I'm not trying to knock Bud by any means, but there's a way to dissect undisputed, which seems to be happening so much more now in boxing that it's kind of lost its luster. I know you kind of feel the same way.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I prefer the guys when they're able to kind of collect heads along the way and get all the belts as they go. But now you're getting guys. Hey, listen, George Kambosos is an undisputed champion of a weight class, which just
undisputed though. Did he fight? No, I don't remember.
No. Tiafimo
is the disputed undisputed.
Right. Yeah. when you got a guy like that who's been an undisputed champion, it really tarnishes. You know, that because you can just have a good night. And he had a lot of good nights in a row to get to that position. And then has had a lot of bad nights ever since then. But it's different when you collect them yourself. You could argue about even Crawford. I mean, Spence collected the belts from the toughest guys in the division when they were in their primes. And then Crawford took his head and took all those belts. So
it's politics. Like, I'm sure Crawford, we talked about this last episode, Crawford would have loved to have fought Ugas to unify, or all the other belts that all the other fighters that Spence beat along the way. He was frozen out. And yes, we talked about this before, Top Rank. Man, they're taking their lumps right now. They have no television deal. I watched Naiwe Inoue fight on Facebook.
On Facebook, dude. On Facebook.
Had a fire up Facebook. And it wasn't even like the player on. I'm not going to like complain too much because it was free, but like wasn't the best experience because you couldn't leave the browser, like the app. I don't have it on my computer anymore. So I had to like find my password and.
Was not easy either.
I had to go back to like. I haven't been on Facebook in years.
You're not a boomer, dude.
Close,
Facebook,
but not.
Facebook is where boomers who hang out.
Yeah, but Top Rank putting that fight on Facebook, not having a deal right now, and also like Bud's victory tour, you know, Teofimo leaving, Shakur leaving. They're unreal, Top Rank, at building stars. No one better, in my humble opinion. But they get to a certain level, and then Top Rank is fine with it. And, you know, Bud's not saying a bad word about them. Shakur was on Ariel's show and said, you know, I wish them no ill will. But, you know, it's up for us and fans to be like, damn, Top Rank is going through it right now.
They're also known for not paying the big bucks. When you have other shows in town that will pay you massive amounts, and we have that more now than ever, you know, it's very easy to be like, you know what, I'm going to go. Thank you for all your help. Thank you for getting me to where I am, but I need to go make life-changing money, you know, elsewhere. There's no loyalty in boxing, truly, especially when you're talking extra zeros on paychecks. So do you blame the fighters? No, because we got a limited window. But at least Top Rank doesn't just stranglehold talent like a lot of the lower-level promoters do, which will remain nameless coming from me. Everyone who knows anything about me knows exactly who the hell I'm talking about. But yeah, Top Rank will at least let you go.
Yes. In terms of like, so Crawford says 160. I'm intrigued by that. I wasn't intrigued by it at first, but more history. Give him a hometown fight. They're talking about the big stadium in Lincoln, Nebraska, for one of the three champions at 160. Pretty cool. Hopefully he doesn't wait another year to fight. Hopefully he fights in the next, you know, early next year. Who knows? That's easier. Like, who knows with Bud? Like, dude won't tip his hand when it comes to when he's going to fight next. Has fought once a year for the last basically 5 years. Some other guys, the lower weights, like the Jermell Charlos, people were bringing up to me on social media. It's like, dude, he's so inactive. He has to be kicking himself right now, Charlo. He has a ton of personal problems. And then there's Eubank as well. Who's fighting Conor Benn, and I would not be surprised if Eubank got into a Crawford discussion or a Canelo discussion because Eubank is big bucks over in the UK.
Yeah, that fight makes a lot of sense. I mean, Eubank's obviously got his hands full with Benn, but I think most people pick him to win once again, and he's gonna be in the ring calling out Crawford. No question.
Or Canelo.
I mean, he's got both options. I think he's already called out Crawford, but you know, does he fight Crawford at 60? Does he go up to 68 and fight Canelo? I could see both. I think if I'm Eubank, I probably go for the Canelo at 68.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have to make 60 anymore. He's probably got a better chance against Canelo. Not that I think he beats him, but either way, both he gets paid handsomely in both fights, and he might even make more money against Canelo, honestly.
Chris, here's your chance to apologize to Canelo for being sleep deprived and saying that he didn't make any adjustments and he's old and now he can go fight Jake Paul. I don't care what he does.
He didn't make any adjustments that night.
It was more your tone. You know, my dad's like, wow, Chris was harsh on Canelo. I said, you know what, Dad? I think he was just disappointed.
I was let down. I was thinking about that today, actually, while I was doing my workout on my cardio. And I was like, man, because, you know, you sent me what we were going to talk about today. And like, we were harsh on Canelo. I'm like, I mean, was I? And then I was like, you know what, though? But I mean, it was the tone because I was upset. I love Canelo. I really, really love Canelo. And you know that. I love Canelo. I talk about how great his fight weeks are. I always defend him against Paulie Malignaggi, who is his biggest hater in the world. And him and I get into little fights all the time about it. And I love Canelo. And I love I love all the great nights that he's given me over the years and so many great fights. But at the same time, I guess that's it. I think you're right, Dan. I think I was upset because I expected more. You know, he just threw the hook harder. Like, that was the adjustment. Just like But also the corner was saying the same thing. Like, you got to do more. It's like, what do you mean you got to do more? How do I do it? I have a puzzle in front of me. The guy fights like an octopus. How do I deal with that? And he just threw the hook harder from further away. And I don't know. So I stand with all that. But also in terms of what he does with his career, he can do whatever he wants now. He can go and fight Eubank. He can go and, fight guys in other countries that aren't the number one contender because he's not the champion anymore. It's fine. Wild. You know, like that's crazy. He's not a champion anymore. And, you know, he can go vie for the titles again and fight the top contenders. Like as long as he's not fighting, if he goes for another title and the governing bodies don't do what they've always done with him and like pull someone out of like Australia that we never heard of so we can get a title fight again. And he actually fights like a top contender. I am completely okay with that. That's awesome. Good for you. You go back to fighting the top guys to win titles the way it should be. And I'd love to see that. I'd love to see if he's driven enough to do that and wants to take on these tough contenders and to be champion once again. I'm sure he does. But I want to see him do it the correct route. And in terms of the Jake Paul thing, like that was a very half-hearted statement. But also,
no, it's not inaccurate at all.
At all. But if he did I wouldn't care.
They were set to fight in May.
That would have pissed me off. That would have been like, all right, dude, then you got to get rid of your titles. Is this going to be a title fight? No, you're just going to hold all the titles for the next 6 months because you don't fight more than every 6 months, and you're going to fight Jake Paul for a non-title fight? No. So that would really bother me. Now, I don't care. Go make that $150 million again. Good for you.
Yeah, the Jake Paul tank fight has been moved to Miami.
Saw
Coming
that.
Your way, pal.
My backyard.
Coming your way. I was in Atlanta. Atlanta Commission not too happy with the rule set or the whole event as a whole. So they go down to Florida where anything goes, literally. So I will be getting COVID. I will
anything
be getting
goes,
COVID again. I will be getting COVID again.
I can even wear this mustache and people don't even stare as much.
Don't even blink twice. So November 14th, Netflix, Jake Paul, Gervonta Davis is in Miami. But back to Canelo, yeah, he could fight a Jake. He could fight a Eubank. A Eubank would be pretty cool. It's just weird to think of Canelo in this ilk or think of Canelo as a non-champion. 7 years ago was the last time Canelo did not hold a world title. When he lost to Bivol, that was for Bivol's belt. But it's just strange to see where he's at now because he's 35, an old 35, which is not a slight. It just is what it is. He's got two more fights on his deal with
Turkey. A worn 35. I don't want to say old 35. Like a worn. Battle worn 35.
You can see it. His legs weren't there. His second wind hasn't been there. You know, it seems like the skull fight was more of an indicator than it was an anomaly. He still could beat the
It's more the system than a bug.
Right. He still can beat the Berlanga, still can beat the Munguia. So that gives me some thought that he could potentially hang with some of those guys. But it's just strange to think of Canelo not as a chance. Like, he's been so driven by titles. He's been so driven by history. You know, it was like dead set on him. What Crawford is now, Canelo was driven in 2021 and beyond. And even going back to 2019 when he went up and beat Kovalev. So it's like, how does he end his career with these last two fights where he's getting paid so much money? Does he fight, you know, guys we've never heard of? Does he try to go for a title at 168? Does Bud relinquish all the belts at 168? And then then Canelo fights for one of them? Does he go on this tour? Does he fight a Eubank, which would just be kind of an attraction type of fight in the UK? He's talked about wanting to fight over there. Does he fight in Mexico? It's just a very different time because Canelo has been the guy. And we've heard the whispers about him slowing down, like the skull fight. We've heard them, but now we've seen it now. He's now lost again. And I'm just curious where he goes. Like, is he driven to win a world title? Is he driven to be at the top? Or is he fine with riding out this deal and then retiring?
I think he makes another run. I think he makes another run. I think that Crawford relinquishes the titles. And it's like when Sonic the Hedgehog gets hit and all the rings explode. It's like that's Crawford leaving the division and all the belts are relinquished and they go out. And listen, there's a ton of talent in that weight class and guys can be fighting. The Lester Martinez's of the world, the Christian Mbillis of the world, Diego Pacheco, Shiraz. You've got really talented young guys that can all now vie for titles and become world champions. And if Canelo wants to make another run and try to reunify, he's got to get through these guys. And I would like to see him. I'd like to see that. Like, if he could do it, awesome. And if he doesn't, you get to topple a guy who is a generational great, and we get to see that. And it's going to really help the next generation of guy become a face. So
are we phasing out the rematch?
Yes, I am. I don't want to see that.
It's such big business.
Do you see it changing anything?
No, I don't. But I know how this sport works.
So I got asked that. I did a radio show a couple days ago, and they were like, "Oh, it was such a close fight. What do you think is going to happen in the rematch?" I'm like, I don't think it was that close, and I don't think a rematch is necessary at all. In fact, I think the fight would be way wider, and it was pretty wide. So, I mean, I don't need to see that, and I don't think Canelo wants to get back in there with him. He, you remember the 11th round when he got hit with that double jab?
Oh my God, he
walked off, and he was just like, "What? I got this guy's too good. Like, I don't want to be here right now." And again, with the lack of adjustments, I don't know. I don't want to see it. I want to see Canelo go and take another stab at these titles. And I know what you're saying. If they throw enough money at Crawford, you know,
was there a rematch clause?
The fight can happen. Listen, this fight, Canelo never wanted this fight. He said it from the beginning. I think he knew that the style would be an issue. I think he also knew he would get no credit if he beat him. And they just throw so much money at him. He was like, "Nah, all right, I'll do it." And he kind of, you kind of saw that during the fight. I think stylistically, I think Crawford always would have been a problem.
I had never heard of a rematch clause. You would have heard about it in the last couple of days, like an automatic something. Like Canelo has, I mean, this many days to trigger it. We haven't heard any of that. So,
well, didn't Turkey already say that Canelo has two more fights? He would mention as this is a rematch immediately, and he didn't. So I don't think there's an interest in that.
And Turkey usually does that. You know, he did that for Bivol and Beterbiev. He said there will be a rematch, and this is the date. And one thing I like about the guy is if when we get rematches, they happen right away. Now Bivol and Beterbiev are in weirdness, and I'm surprised by the amount of people that were tweeting at me that want to see Crawford fight Benavidez.
I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that. We have this tendency to do that with great champions, and we've seen this in a way. You just want to keep pushing them into weight classes until they lose. It's like, no, I want to see you fight Anthony Joshua. It's like, what's this? Stop. Like in a way in Tank, I was like, what are we doing? The guy's a 22-pounder. We're going to have him fight a 35-pounder, granted a small one. So he's a 30-pounder. We're going to jump three weight classes and fight the top guy in those divisions? I don't know. You're just going to keep pushing him until he gets beat, and then you're going to be like, oh, well, he wasn't that good, I guess. Like, no.
Is Bivol more likely? Is a Bivol Crawford fight?
I think that's even worse.
That clip went everywhere. I stand corrected. I don't know why I thought Bivol has fought professionally at 68 before. Never has.
No.
Career light heavyweight. But has said he would go down to 168 to fight Canelo.
But I think that was just to chase Canelo. Because he knows. Well,
now you can chase the guy that beat Canelo.
He can, but like, is it a realistic? It's Crawford's
just a money thing.
The fact that Crawford says 160, that just shows me where he's going.
Right, because he doesn't say anything. Like he stone face his interviews. I mean, he's doing more interviews, but he's not saying much in these interviews. We shall see. It's what he always says. We shall see. We shall see. Will you fight Canelo again? We shall see. Are you going to retire? We shall see. It's his only line. But the one thing he did say was, maybe I'll go to 160. And I get why he would do that, because he could pick off belts there. So we'll see. It's an interesting time to think of Canelo as not like the man, like as official.
The guy just jumped two weight classes, nearly three. We're going to ask him to do another one. Like, we're going to go one more.
I don't think he should fight. I don't think he should fight Benavidez or Bivol at 175. Crawford 175, no. That's insanity. 68 is them coming to him. Like, Benavidez is
even
not
that's
going
not,
to 168.
They're still bigger guys. Like, it's still like it's still like another weight class just coming to you.
I think it would be cool, like, in terms of, like, undisputed versus undisputed. With Bivol being undisputed at 175 and Crawford being undisputed at 168, there's some type of marketing there. It's cool. It's nothing more for Bud to accomplish with it. It's not like a huge money fight if Saudi isn't throwing up insane dollars at it. Like the Benavidez one would be like more of a seller because he sells tickets. We'll see. I'm kind of set on the 160 move. I kind of want to see that. I kind of want to see how he looks there.
I had said that not knowing that he had said that. I was speaking about it earlier today on one of the Pro Box shows, and I said, I'm like, I want to see him go 60. 60 needs some life injected into it. 54, is a hot commodity. I don't think he needs, and I don't think he can go back there. So there's no need for him to go back there. But 60 needs it. He would be an injection of profile. Not to mention he's a fantastic fighter and he can probably beat a lot of these guys. I think that makes the most sense. But the issue is, does that make the most financial sense for him? And the answer is no.
Well, that's what he said to Ariel. He's like, do you think Tapora, the UFC guy, he's like, is that will I make more for Tapora than Canelo? And Ariel said no. And he's like, well, then I don't care. I'm not doing it. And also, I don't even like Tapora is hot right now. That's another thing too. Like these UFC guys, like Tapora is tap dancing right now for Crawford. It's so pathetic. It's just rinse and repeat. These UFC guys, who's the hottest guy? Flavor of the week. I'm not trying to downgrade anything Tapora has done, but we've seen these guys get knocked off so quickly in the UFC. It's not like boxing where you can stay on top for 10, 15 years. It's just like, oh, Tapora is the latest, great fighter right now. So, of course, he's going to call out Crawford. I'm just very tired of that. And Dana White put a kibosh to it. Don't want to see that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I'm sure you saw that interview that Amber Dixon had with Dana. Mm-hmm. And, they were talking. She was awesome. She was amazing. And she pushed back. And she pushed back with confidence and respect. She's very respectful in the way she pushed back. And, he had mentioned, the pay difference between boxing. And he was trying to put a kibosh to that. And he was like, oh, no, we got guys that make that much money. She's like, $100 million? And he's like, yeah, well, McGregor. And she's like, yeah, against a boxer in a boxing ring, one guy. But also when he said, he was like, no, we had stars. And he mentioned two. He mentioned McGregor and he mentioned, what's her name? And Ronda Rousey. And, I was like, he said them too, like he was going to say more, but then realized he doesn't have more. So he was like, yeah, we have stars that make a lot of money. It was McGregor and Ronda.
Dude, and then they make a lot of money. There's no doubt they generate money. The problem is that the UFC takes the larger chunk of the pie. And
right, and he also explained that it's spread out amongst the whole card, whereas if you look at boxing cards, it's all at the top of the main event and the guy who's actually bringing in the people. That's kind of the playbook for these guys for MMA. If they want to make that generational money, they have to come this way.
Still,
I don't know if that changes.
Still, when everyone is debating, like, what's the bigger sport, and like Dana White being front and center at this fight, and the discussion being even higher now with TKO getting into boxing, still, your biggest star is trying to get the attention of a boxer. And I love Bud just being like, I've honestly never heard of the guy. I don't know if he has. Like, Bud watches UFC, because I watch a lot of UFC and I haven't heard, which is not right, because I know who Tapora is. Dude's is a star across
overseas. He's a beast, overseas. Total beast.
Beast, big time, great boxer. Great hands and has a ton of followers and a big time following, but I don't know, I just don't want to see that anymore. With Canelo Crawford in the rearview mirror, I think the biggest fight remaining on the boxing schedule is Devin Haney versus Brian Norman, which is for a welterweight title.
Good fight.
I can't wait for that one. That's what I'm looking forward to next.
That's a really good fight. I've been talking about it in the gyms this week and you're not the only one excited. I'm not the only one excited. The people are excited about this fight. And I think that now that we've gotten Canelo Crawford past us, that we can focus on that one, because that's a big one. And it's a really good fight. It's two young guys who are super hungry. It's two undefeated guys. You know, Haney has his asterisks, on his zero. But I don't even care about that. I think this is a really good fight timing-wise. I think it's a good fight stylistic-wise. I think both guys are taking a big risk, because I think both guys can lose this fight. It's a bit of a pick'em fight, although I know my leanings, which I don't want to divulge just yet. But I think it's a good fight. I think it's a good fight. I'm looking forward to that one.
I think it also sets the tone for 147, a division that has been also barren, just like middleweight. But now we're going to get some life into it. Haney, Norman, we can have who's the guy at welterweight. Does Ryan Garcia fall back into it? Does Rolly move up? Is he at 147 already, Rolly?
No, he's already at 47.
Yeah, Rolly's a champ, so will Rolly step into that? Well, guys from 140, Fimo, Shakur. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of movement after this. I think it's going to be a precursor. It's a really good fight, and I think it's going to help set the tone at 147 for what could be some better times ahead for that division. A Fundora Thurman, like we talked about before, 10-25. I think that's a very important fight at the division, because I think Fundora is one of the bigger names at 154, and Thurman can potentially upset him. Ben Eubank, too, November 15th. You know, I don't think they'll be able to replicate the first one, man. That
rarely does.
Both in the ring and outside. We're not going to have another great reveal with the dad, and I could see them rumbling again. But that had to be done again because it's just money. I mean, that was such a massive, massive windfall that they're going to run that back November 15th. So those are those are the three big ones, I think.
What's going on with the heavyweight division? Do we have anything coming up with them?
Usyk is not fighting again this year. Joshua put an essay out on Instagram and said he will be back, but doesn't know when. Fury, who knows? We got Parker and Wardley. That's not a huge fight.
Oh, and Wardley. It's not a huge fight.
Moses Atama, is he coming back this year?
He's fighting. Is he fighting Irkovich? Is that fight done? That's a great fight.
I haven't heard anything about that.
No, you haven't heard that?
No.
I thought that was, yeah, I heard that.
Do I have a blind spot and I missed that?
Nothing gets past me, bro. Maybe this did.
Damn. Not that I know of, but I would like to see him in the ring.
Am I making that up? I thought
that
was.
I think you're making that up, bro.
No, damn, because I was thinking that was going to be the next one, and I was like, that's a really good fight, and I like the fact that they're taking a chance like that.
Yeah, let's talk Inoue. Yeah, I like that. Let's talk Inoue. We didn't have any time to talk about him on the last episode. When you have a generational fight like Canelo Crawford, one of the pound-for-pound greats somehow gets forgotten about, and that's because the fight was on Facebook in the U.S. and a lot of reasons, but Inoue wins, and we all know that. 118, 110, 117, 111, almost like a shutout. He improves to 26-0 in title fights. 11-fight KO streak is snapped, which goes all the way back to November of 2019, the rematch with Donaire. So what I saw from Inoue, I went back and watched, was him being more of a boxer, him adjusting, went down against Neary, went down against Cardenas. In the pocket, maybe too long, taking too many risks. I can still win. I can still box everybody. And I can shut out a really good fighter in Akhmadaliyev. I mean, it was poetry in motion still. His shot still landed. His shot sounded loud, but he used his jab. I just thought it was a more well-rounded, and this could be scarier, version of Inoue.
Dan, when you said I can still box, we've never really seen him do that. We've never seen him not take risks to try and get you out of there. And listen, he said this, a couple months back. He's like, I'm going to fight more cautious. I'm going to box. I'm going to focus on winning. I didn't believe him. I was just like, no way. His fighting warrior Japanese spirit is going to come out as soon as he gets touched, and he's going to bang. And Akhmadaliyev is going to force him into that. He's going to hit him. He's going to be there. The guy hits hard. He's strong. He's a hard presser. And he proved me wrong. Once again, the guy, he is just something else. He is a next level boxer. His abilities are off the chart. His physical talents are off the chart. His disciplines off the chart. We're seeing greatness in real time with Naya Inoue. And he's continuing to improve while moving up in weight classes. Maybe in terms of his punching power and single punch shot, we're not seeing that as much. We're seeing other folds to him. And we're seeing how complex and layered he is as a fighter. And how good his dad is as a trainer. Like, so good.
He never talk about his trainer.
I try to as much as I can. I try to talk about his father because his father has two sons. Both of them are been world champions. I believe the son lost somewhat recently. And he has two sons with very different physical gifts. Obviously, Naya punches like a mule and has KO power, one punch either hand. And then the brother doesn't, but they're both very good and they're both world class. And you see the technique, you see the hand position, you see the discipline. When I see a trainer who can train different styles and different physical gifts, but still get them to titles, that shows me that they're very good trainers. And, so I think we got to give our flowers, to Shingo, right? It's Shingo,
Mr. Inoue.
Mr. Inoue. Thank you, Dan.
Bow.
You bow. Thank you, Dan. I don't know
his name. Shit bow. You remember Curb? Shit bow.
But he's an excellent, excellent trainer. And I was super impressed with his ability to domesticate Akhmadaliyev. and to use his boxing ability to disarm him and hit and don't be hit. He didn't get cracked at the very end. Do you see when he got nailed?
Bro, you only got hit with 64 shots. That's one of the lowest.
Did you see that? Did you see that shot he got hit with at the very end of round 12? Like that looked like it stung him a little bit. But yeah, he didn't. It's not like he came back and tried to knock him out right there. He just went right back to boxing, smiled, was like, "I'm good, I got it, I did it."
He landed only. Akhmadaliyev landed only 64 punches, which is one of the lowest totals ever on 62 punches, with the fewest by an Inouye foe in a 12-round fight.
Wow.
So showing you different wrinkles, man. He was 6 of 31 with his jab, averaged 31 jabs thrown around. That's a very high number.
62 punches total landed?
Yeah, from Akhmadaliyev.
Bro, that's 5 punches a round.
It's putrid. And this is
that's
a guy.
Crazy.
This is a guy, him and his promoter, Eddie Hearn, doing his job. Been calling for this fight. Remember calling Inouye a duck?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it was so funny because Inouye was like, you lost to the guy. You lost to Topalia. I was like, I didn't duck you. You lost to a guy. And then I fought him and knocked him out.
Yeah. And then I fought the guy that you lost to and I beat him. And now I'll fight the next guy. I mean, and then the next guy now.
And then he basically was like, wait your turn.
The next guy now is David Picasso. After the fight, Inouye confirmed to be fighting the Mexican in Saudi Arabia in December. It'll be the fourth fight for Naoya Inouye in 2025. This guy, I mean, he may not be number one anymore. He may not be number two. That's Bud Nusik. But, I mean, the activity and the just winning. It's a three-headed race right now for who's the best fighter in the world. And if you're arguing for Inouye, it's for the activity. We have to congratulate him and admire the fact that at the top of his game at age 30, he's given us 4 fights in one calendar year.
If only he cared about being a star. If only he cared about
the West. I think he does.
West.
I heard he's got a little bit of an ego over there.
I'm sure he does. But like, if you really wanted to be a global star, you would learn English. You'd fight over here. You'd make it a point to do. Listen, you've interviewed him. You've seen him at fighter meetings. He doesn't seem to be thrilled to be in the States.
I think it adds to his lore.
It does. It does. I mean, he's super cool. He's too cool for school. He's too cool for the U.S. But if he really wanted to be a star and he learned English and he could be huge, huge. You know, that old joke about being huge in Japan. He could be huge in the States if he really cared to be. I don't see it out of him. And it keeps us from having a global megastar because I think he fills all the gaps.
After the fight, Inouye said that Terence Crawford's performance over Canelo inspired him. He watched the fight the night before, stepped into the ring and said, the way Crawford fought was helpful to me. He fought carefully until the end against Canelo, who was coming in with sloppy offense. Seeing that before my fight, seeing some things overlapped with what I had envisioned for my fight, he was doing what I wanted to do. So that became a good reference. I mean, how cool is that?
Very cool.
That is one of the coolest things.
I also feel better about being mean to Canelo on Sunday morning when I was sleep deprived because even Naoya Inouye said some
wild shots.
Sloppy offense.
Naoya Inouye called Canelo Alvarez sloppy.
All right. So all of you Mexican fans coming at me, I have
wipe your hands.
I got Naoya Inouye on me and behind me. So we got that too.
And did you also see this? Nakatani was in the crowd and he tried to leave and Inouye wasn't having it. Grabbed the mic and said, "Not where are you?" And started pointing at him. Like that was some epic stuff.
That's a big G move. He's like, no. Where are you going?
And they're gonna fight next year. Like Nakatani has now moved up. The stars are aligned. If he gets upset by Picasso, who did not look great in his last fight, but
no, he didn't.
Inouye is gonna be another, you know, -1,000 favorite in this one.
I've actually seen Picasso fight a bunch of times. I don't see how he puts up a stiff challenge.
Yeah, he might be more food, especially with Inouye is looking like more like a well-rounded fighter.
Dan, I'm going to show my age here. Remember Pac-Man?
Well, you said the Sonic the Hedgehog reference, and now we have a Pac-Man.
No, I'm going video. I'm getting one even older now. He's one of those little glowing orbs. Yeah. Until he gets the next one.
Picasso's next, and Nakatani is waiting in the wings. And we got to get to Japan.
Nakatani's the big orb. Because remember in the game, they're the little orbs. And then you went to the little corners, and they're the big ones. Nakatani's the big one.
So Lee Groves, who's one of the most respected boxing writers, researchers, historians, works for CompuBox. I was DMing back and forth with him, and he told me that he believes that Naoya Inoue could be the best fighter to ever come from Japan, which is pretty high praise. But he said, I also think he could lose to Nakatani.
I agree with both those statements. I think Nakatani poses a serious threat. And I think that Naoya Inoue's team believes that as well. And the way they're operating and moving towards that fight shows me that they are taking this very seriously.
We got to get to Japan.
Correct. I've said it. I've said it. I'm going. I'll be there.
Who's that paying
fight,
our freight?
Dude, if that fight, I'll pay for both of us. We need to go to that.
Chris is flush with cash.
I'll pay for both of us. And not even that. It's worth it, dude. I'll sell things for this.
Kidneys? Organs?
No body parts. But I got some nice things I can sell.
Car? Your belt?
I'll sell it. Sell my belt. I will.
Your belt is a trophy. We learned that belts are trophies.
Yeah, but I'm not selling it, dude. That's my belt.
But we learned that this week. This is what happens when fights cross over into the mainstream. One of my good friends, John Ebel, I'll shout him out right now. Hey, what's the story with the belts? And I was like, thank you for asking. This is a learning moment for you. The belts are essentially trophies. He gave them back.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, that's pretty cool. And I'm glad that moment got blown. I saw Stephen A. Smith talking about it on his show and stuff. So you're not selling your belt for us to go to Tokyo?
No.
It's a hard
I'll sell my car. I'll sell some jewelry.
Feet picks?
Nope. And for our listeners, ladies,
all five of them.
The internet is forever. Internet is forever. Do not sell your goodies.
Don't shame them.
I'm not shaming anybody, but I know a lot of women that have come back after the fact and been like, oop, shouldn't have done that.
Internet is forever. They're undefeated too, the internet. It's like an Naoya Inoue. Undefeated. And forever.
Father Time, the internet, and Naoya Inoue.
We will be there, and we will bring you great coverage. I want to take Inside Boxing Live international. I have never been to the UK, and I have so many ideas. Like, I need Fury to fight Joshua. I need that to happen.
I love that fight so much.
We go to Wembley. We ride the double-decker. We do content all week. We go to pubs. Our UK IBL brethren take us in with open arms. We go to Japan. Take this international, man. It's time. Wouldn't you say?
Agreed. We've outgrown, you know, these small apartments that we're in. We've outgrown just this country.
Too many Vegas trips.
Too many Vegas trips. Not enough Miami trips. That's for sure.
Well, I got one now. I'm going to Montreal next week for MVP, Most Valuable Prospects Championship Edition, Montreal.
Montreal's cool. I haven't been there in a while, but Montreal's cool.
How about this one? South Padre Island? I'm going in October for a fight.
Where's that?
That is on the south border of Mexico and Texas. It's a beach town.
It's in the Gulf?
I believe, yes. It's in the Gulf.
If it's in, yeah. Right. That's cool. All right. I mean, it's not... I wouldn't be high on my list, but
all right. It's different. That's what I always say. Boxing brings you to places you've never been. So,
I'm going to Fresno again soon.
Oof. Sorry.
Oof.
I went to Flint. Speaking of places. During the COVID, dude.
Yikes.
For Shields pay-per-view.
Your blood is probably still radioactive from drinking the water out there.
I didn't drink the water, bro. I know. I had water bottles. I was told not to drink the water. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say you probably absorbed it when you showered. He's like, I didn't shower.
They told me not to shower. I lived to talk about it. That was 2020. I like Detroit. I had a good time there for DiBella Broadway Boxing Show. Tommy Hearns came to the event, and I got to interview him.
I had a great time in Detroit as well, actually.
Dude, I went to the best steakhouse.
I called the Clarissa Shields fight there as well.
Yeah, I went to the best steakhouse. Top three steakhouse experiences, prime and proper, in Detroit with Lou... The whole team, Alex Dombroff, Shackle, Corey Erdman. Corey Erdman doesn't eat red meat, but he watched us eat red meat. And
I've been there, Dan. I went there with Claudia.
Awesome.
Went there with Claudia, ate a lot of really good steak, had some whiskey. She outdrank me as usual.
She's a beast.
She outdrank me and then she took me to a cigar bar and just... smoked a lot and woke up the next day feeling absolutely horrible, and she looked like an angel Yeah. This should, like, she came downstairs like, I'm ready. I'm like, what is wrong? Ow. Yeah, vampire's a good way to put it.
Did you see this? Teofimo Lopez, Shakur Stevenson is progressing, and it could be a Saudi-backed PBC pay-per-view. That is a new term for the lexicon.
Love it.
I love the fight. Oh, wait, Dan. I bashed the fight.
You did. You got me and you went head-to-head on this. Actually,
can I take that back and say that now I'm getting excited because they might put it at Barclays?
Oh, wow, that's a smart move.
It could. It's PBC. I think Teofimo is very close or is about to sign with PBC versus Stevenson. I don't know if it's going to be a DAZN pay per view. I don't know if it's going to be an Amazon Prime pay per view. Turkey's now involved with it. There's a lot of the business side of boxing right now is as crazy as it's ever been.
Crazy.
I don't know how many fans care.
There's no rules anymore. It doesn't.
Like when I read that last night from our guy Lance Pugmire, great job by him. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, Saudi backed PBC pay per view. That just doesn't, like, I don't get it. Like, I thought Saudi was out of pay per view. I thought they were not working with PBC. Is it going to be on Prime? Is it going to be on DAZN? Is it going to be a Ring thing? Like, I don't know. Everyone, just stay tuned. It's a good fight, and it's a very, very important fight in terms of the – I've always said that. I just don't think it's going to be like a barn burner, and that's fine. But it's a very important fight, Teofimo and Shakur.
I'm going to push back again. I know, you know, same thing I said last time. I like this fight a lot. I'm going to enjoy it tremendously. I think it's two high-level guys that are – I have a very high boxing IQ with very different styles. I think Teofimo is dynamic enough and athletic enough that he can push Shakur out of his shell and do things that, you know, we haven't seen. Or Shakur completely disarms like he does everyone else, and then you're just amazed at his ability to do that. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to this fight, but yeah, I can see how it could not be the most spectacularly entertaining fights, but I think it's going to be a spectacular performance from at least one of them, if not both.
If we do work it, do content for it, which we probably will. I have to be ready for Shakur because I know he's going to say something to me because he did retweet me and said, bro, you don't like boxing. I'm convinced you don't like boxing. So I'm ready for I'm ready for Shakur because I'll have my stuff ready to go because I have praised him before. Praised him after the Zepeda fight, praised him before the Zepeda fight, praised him numerous times in his podcast, had him on the podcast, talked about how great we think he is. And he's retweeted those. So he retweets me when I say negative, he retweets me when I say positive. So I'm going to say, bro, I think I just keep it real. I keeps it real.
Yeah, I think you keep the same energy with whatever it is. I mean, I think that's how I've always been. I mean, he called me out before over something I said. And I was just like, someone asked me, what do you think about that? I'm like, I don't care what he thinks about me. I say what I say. This is what I do for a living. If like whether he agrees with me or he doesn't, whatever. I'm sure next week next week he's going to like what I say. This week he didn't like what I say. Whatever. Not everybody likes what I say all the time. You know, my best friends don't like what I say all the time. My brothers like what I say all the time.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Listen, I'm old. I don't care about it. You know, the fighters can be very sensitive. I'm a fighter myself, a former fighter. But I don't care what people say about me. It's fine.
We end the show on a sad note. Obviously, we've lost the great Ricky Hatton. Terrible. Awful.
Yeah.
Gut-wrenching.
Gut-wrenching is right.
Rest in peace, Hitman. Didn't get to watch your fight too much, but I do remember when he came over to fight Mayweather and singing that song, "There's Only One Ricky Hatton." I posted it on Twitter. 20,000 Brits. And I think that has a lot to say about who Ricky Hatton was. You know, Lou DiBello has been in the sport for a really long time, said he's never seen anything like it. He's never seen Brits travel across the pond, because they have, and they will in the future, but not like Ricky's fight against Mayweather. And I think that's a testament to what his people thought about him as a person. And what I'm reading and what I'm hearing, Adam Smith, a talented broadcaster, said it's up there in terms of national mourning with Princess Diana. Like, that's how special Hatton was to the people over there. So.
And I believe
that was a gut punch.
I believe it. And different than you, I actually do remember him fighting. I remember fighting a lot. And, you know, I'm a little older than you.
I didn't get to see him live.
Yeah, Ricky was, he had a great crossover appeal because his style was so entertaining. And he was super popular over there. So we normally don't get to see a lot of British fighters on their come up. I got to watch a lot of Ricky Hatton fights. I was talking to Declan Warrington, who's one of the better writers in this sport today, and he's a British guy. And he asked me, he was like, "Hey, mate, do you know how much do you really know about Ricky Hatton?" I was like, "A ton." I'm like, and I mentioned like off the wall fights that I remember, like Joe Hutchinson and wow. And Ben Tackey. And he was like, "Oh my God." He's like, "Ben Tackey." He's like, I haven't thought about Ben Tackey in a decade. I go, "I know, yeah." But that's how far back I go watching Ricky Hatton. I remember him fighting Ben Tackey, you know, and all those different fights back then. And Ricky was just so entertaining, and his crowd was insanity, the way they cheered, the way they jeered, the way they drank. And then there was the him, you know, always like in the pub, becoming Ricky Fatten, playing darts with people. And Paulie Malignaggi, good friend of mine, obviously, and someone I work with very, very closely, fought Ricky.
Yep.
And after they fought, actually became very friendly with Ricky. And he said he was so funny. And he was one of the funniest, at times was self-deprecating, but was also like a ribber. He would rib you. And like you could not like the guy because he was always just so entertaining. And certain people just have that kind of personality that they're gonna light up a room. They're gonna entertain everyone in there. And they seem like that's their job. Ricky not only did that in the ring, but he apparently did it in the pub, and he did it anywhere he was. Which is why it doesn't surprise me when you tell me that they're national mourning at the level of a princess, because Ricky was a phenomenon. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans, we only know him for what you said when he came over here and got iced by Pacquiao and knocked out by the rare Floyd Mayweather welterweight knockout. But even to those fights, he fought the way he always fought. Balls to the wall, all out on my shield if I need to. I'm trying my best to win at all costs, which a lot of guys we see these days don't fight like that. Ricky's a throwback in many ways. He will be severely, sorely missed in our sport. And I just wish him and his family and his friends, everyone who's mourning him, rest in peace, Ricky, because you will be missed.
That's tough, because I mental health is at the forefront. You can read the statement that was put out by his family. We know the cause of death now, and it's tough. Anyone out there that's struggling, like there's ways. People want to hear from you, and people want to help. And it's tough. It was a really real gut punch because that guy was larger than life. He was a larger than life figure and just a regular dude. Just a dude. Like, he didn't want to be famous. He didn't want to get too big. And that's why the Mayweather Hatton 24/7 and the buildup was so amazing, because they were so different. And like when they would go back and forth, like 24/7, they'd show Floyd's camp, and he's obviously Floyd. Like, yeah. And then you have Ricky, who was just a down to earth guy, and that's what made it. They meshed so well. And I've not the first person I heard Paulie say that, after I fought Hatton, we became friends. And, Trish Dixon, our really good friend, wrote a book on him and was legit friends, close friends with him. And Trish is a great guy. And it just shows you, it sucks, man. It's a hard
Paulie thing. Told another, when you made me think of something, Paulie was talking about him very fondly. And he had mentioned going out and hanging out with Ricky and him just going down the block and just going out. And Paulie was like, "Dude, you know, you're like famous, like really, like really famous. Famous. Like famous, famous. Like you
like
can't
up
just
there
like
with Oasis in terms of.
Yeah,
like,
right. In, over you can't, weekend. You can't just go to the pub and throw some darts." And he just didn't understand that. Like you said, he didn't care about being so famous. Cool. He just was, you know, and it's just, I don't know. It's we lost a good one.
We also lost Thomas Gerbasi. I just saw that come across.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah. Longtime boxing writer,
oh,
contributor.
Wow.
Great guy. I remember his.
Oh, man. That's a dude. He's a friend of mine. That's a gut punch. Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
I spoke to him. I spoke to him recently.
I know a lot of people are just saying that they just talked to him, or they just did a Zoom with them, and they just spoke with him. Like he had, as long as his last tweets was about Canelo Crawford. I don't know how or what's going on, but one of the
good
guys.
To him Pacquiao Fight Week. I did an interview with him, Pacquiao Fight Week. Oh, yeah. That's terrible.
He was contributing to The Ring and doing a bunch of stuff. He's been around, wrote books, been around forever. Very funny.
Oh, man.
Great.
He's been
Twitter
following
follow.
Me since I was a young in fighting in boxing on Long Island. And he mentioned that when we spoke. Oh, man, you really
Yeah, it sucks. Messed. So I hate to end the show. This is a fun show. I hate to end on a bummer, but that sometimes it be like that. And, you know, these are two really good guys, Hatton and Thomas Gerbasi, and they'll be missed. That's our show. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Say those DMs. We're out.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.